Hey, welcome to the Mazer Patrol podcast. I'm Kevin, and I have assembled for this monumental occasion a huge think team of Ultraman enthusiasts. let's run through the cast here. Alex?
Sure thing. I am Alex Rushdie. I run a blog called Control All Monsters, but I think more relevant to people's interests, I co-run with Chris Olio Seismic Toys, which recently started releasing Ultraman toys under the Ultraman Vinyl Odyssey line. And I also am CEO of 13AM Games, which is making a kaiju beat-em-up video game that's launching very soon. And I'm just a massive nerd that absolutely loves Ultraman.
Connor?
I'm Connor. I have a blog called Easter's Kaiju Compendium that I have set out on a mission to review and go over the production history of every single Ultraman monster there is. I haven't updated in a long time due to real life stuff. And like Alex, I'm a massive Ultraman nerd.
And I feel bad even having to introduce this guy because I feel like everybody already knows him. But Mike,
oh, you're talking me up too much already. Great. Way to set me up. Great. Now I'm going to be the ass of the group. Mike Dent, sometimes known as Mock Dent. I am the main force behind Vintage Henshin, which you can find on YouTube at bit.ly/VintageHenshin or youtube.com/VintageHenshin. I'm also on involved with Shout Factory. I co-wrote or co-produced and directed the Ultraman Day Ultrathon last year for 2021. And there's a lot. There's a lot more there. And almost like I'm also a voice actor. You can also hear me in Welcome to Demon School, Irma-kun Season 2, which is currently available on control.com. And a couple other different places, but that's going to take a whole other podcast. I think we're going to go about that. So either way, I have been summoned for this momentous occasion, I guess if you could call it momentous.
So, yeah, the occasion in this case is the annual conclusion of an Ultraman show. And in this case, all of us have opinions, and we felt like rather than just kind of shooting messages back and forth, it would be good content to kind of get on mic together and not on Mic Dent, on microphone, you know.
But, like, guys, stop, get off of me. Oh my god, the microphone's over there.
So this should be a good discussion. I'll preface it by saying that, you know, everybody, as you've heard, has had some contacts with Tsuburaya in the past, so everyone's opinions are their own, and we'll try to not give away too much of the secret sauce, but I think there's a lot of speculation we might be able to do regarding the reasons why this particular show came into being in the way that it did. And spoilers, I think there was a little room for improvement.
A little. Well, yes. That's it. That's the episode. You can find me at Mock
Good night, everybody.
On Twitter. No.
I mean, I can kind of give my thoughts first, and then just that if you were
use
to,
as a springboard, yeah.
Yeah, coming up with a parallel to the Ultraman franchise would be the Star Trek franchise, right? You know, something running since the 60s and has been going kind of multiple iterations, been reiterated on time and time again. And Ultraman Trigger is, in my opinion, the Star Trek Into Darkness of the Ultraman franchise, where
I was going to say Picard, but yeah,
I was going to say the exact same thing. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Well, it's one of these, and to give context for people who don't know anything about Star Trek was rebooted in the 2000s, and Star Trek Into Darkness takes a bunch of the imagery from one of the most popular Star Trek movies, Wrath of Khan. But it's all devoid of the context for why those things work. So you have characters that are giving tearful goodbyes in the original movie after they've known each other for decades. And in this remake, they are giving the same tearful goodbyes for people that they've just met. And they kind of use little bits and pieces of things that they think that people know from Star Trek, you know, sort of the cliches of, oh, you know, tribbles are a thing from Star Trek. We should have tribbles in this. But nothing that makes that thing good in the original context that it was popularized in. So it's very much one of those, they're expecting people to have a cursory background knowledge, see something that they recognize and go, ah, yes, it's like that other thing that I like. And that's really the impression that I got with Ultraman Trigger, because this is supposed to be a 25th anniversary show celebrating Ultraman Tiga, which is the next generation in Star Trek terms of the Ultraman franchise.
It's also the 55th anniversary show overall, too. So it has a lot riding on it.
Yeah.
Why would you compare it to Picard? I'm curious.
I just feel like, and Mike might agree with me, based on the little bits I've seen of Picard, it feels like an unnecessary sequel of sorts. Whereas, Picard, you know, Star Trek.
Picard is a sequel, though. I mean, is Trigger?
Well, yes, it wants to be a remake and a sequel at the same time.
It's a soft reboot. It's a soft reboot of Ultraman.
Yeah.
Tiga.
It feels like, yeah, because it's, at least for me, Picard, it's, because, I mean, to me, like, you know, Tiga is very much like Next Generation.
Yes.
It's very much, you know, like, Next Generation is revered, you know, it's considered one of the greats, but it's also a show that's still heavily flawed. You know, whatever, yeah. And same thing with Tiga, where it's like, you know, that's a show that, I mean, the highs are remembered, and it's not exactly remembered for the lows, but the big thing is that Picard is not so much an unnecessary sequel, it feels like it is a follow-up written by people who don't quite understand what made the original work.
Yeah, it's definitely like a bunch of executives who are, and you know, who are like, why did people like the show? Oh, Picard, the Borg? Yeah, that's what people liked about Next Generation. We need to throw that into the show.
It's like, Data? Yeah, let's make Data a crucial plot point.
Yeah.
The two of them never had a relationship. Great, let's go! You know,
more like, and that's kind of like what it is in Trigger, where it's like, oh, the Dark Giants in Dark Tiga in the Tiga movie were really big. What if we made an entire show about that?
Which admittedly is a good idea. It's just
I disagree, but I'll agree to disagree there. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, that's an interesting discussion to have because I was trying to think about how to formulate my how do I explain my opinion of Trigger. And I think that, you know, as someone who's watched pretty much everything Ultraman that exists, there's still a loose ends that I got to, you know, tie up, but like pretty much everything. I've never watched a show and just felt, I guess, like disappointed, except for maybe like the OG Ginga and I guess probably the Ultimate Hero, like, or I guess a Powered, you know, the American show. So like there is actually very little Ultraman content that I can say I don't like.
I would agree on that. Like I was thinking about that the other day too. And for me, I would, as of this moment, and it might go up. If I ever rewatch the show, it might not. I consider Trigger probably my least favorite show of the franchise. And I've seen everything except for like Andromelos and like Ultraman Kids and all the goofy kind of anime spoof stuff. Like I've seen all the major shows. Yeah. And you know, I like some shows more than others. I think some shows have like really bad lows and really great highs and so on and so forth. And some shows I think, well, this show's objectively better, but like I like this show more because it has this or that. And I look at Trigger and like there's stuff I like about Trigger a lot. There's stuff I really enjoy about this show, but it just does not scratch that same itch. Like, you know, like when Rube aired, I like Rube, but like I liked the shows that came before Rube better, and I liked Taiga way more than Rube. But like I don't hate Rube. Like, I rewatched it over the summer and I really enjoyed it. But, you know, and like Alex said, like, there's not really much to compare it to other than like The Ultimate Hero or Ginga. But like, I watched both of those shows like when I was like 2 or 3 years into being an Ultraman fan. So they were already kind of established. They already existed in like the ether as a complete story versus like Trigger, where I had to watch it week after week. So I wonder if, like, hypothetically, if I got into Ultraman, like, 3 years from now, like, let's say I got into Ultraman this year, I started with the original show, did not watch anything else, and I finished Trigger in, like, 2025, would I still feel this way about it? Or would I like it? Maybe I would have liked it a little bit more.
Mm. Well, I think part of what makes it tough is also just having the context for Trigger. I'm sure if I did never watch Tiga, I may not.
Yeah.
I may enjoy it more, but I still think it would be the most flawed of all the new gen shows. But it's surprising for me because when I think back about all the Ultraman shows that I've watched, there are ones where, you know, like for example, and I'm not, you know, trying to upset any Ace fans. I like Ultraman
what?
Ace. I really do love Ultraman Ace. I gotta be honest, there are stretches into that show where I was like, man, this is getting pretty rough.
No, the Danu Meizu arc is terrible.
Yeah, it's not
outside
good.
Outside of a couple episodes. I hate that child.
He's annoying, and he's not the sixth Ultra Brother. I'm sorry, kid. You're not. He comes up next year. But the thing is even though that show had its low lows, I actually really enjoy Ace.
Yeah.
Right? With Trigger, it's kind of the opposite. Right? There are a handful of episodes where I felt like the show was being what it could have been, which was basically a really goofy Ultraman show. And then the rest of it was struggling with its identity and just
Diet Tiga,
mostly forgettable. Yeah,
I think that's the thing. I think that's the grand thesis is that I think if Trigger was more of an original show, I think whatever failures it would have would not be as bad, in my opinion, because Ace, spoiler alert for like some 50-year-old rubber monster shows, but like you have like Return of Ultraman, they kill off his girlfriend and his best friend Ace, they get rid of Minami, Leo has like 3 or 4 different retools, and then they drop the teacher aspect in 80. You have all this stuff, but none of that feels as bad compared to like Trigger, because like it's that stuff is still all new to me, like you know, at the time it was still new, it like was still trying to do new things in that box of Ultraman fights a monster every week. Whereas Trigger, I noticed, like, you know, right around the Zet crossover, I thought, oh wow, this is really fun and exciting, this is the kind of Ultraman I really enjoy, this must mean the show's turning around. And then it went back to redoing Final Odyssey as a TV show, and then once that got over with, and they started kind of going into the end game, but like doing like the they had the guy from Taiga, the recolor from Taiga, Bara Geiler or whatever, show up, and they had a Boris and Vanilla show up, and they had Ignis kind of have that, oh, is he actually a bad guy? That final bit, I thought it was like, oh, it's gonna stick the landing, it's gonna end pretty well, like it's gonna be kind of you know, a good ending sort of, and then it kind of went off the rails again. So I think I would agree with Alex that I think when the show actually does, you know, break away from the Tiga script, when it decides, okay, we're doing an episode where Zet shows up and Power Dada invades every cell phone in Japan.
Which, like, was an insane pull that I really appreciated.
That was Power Dada was the best monster choice this season.
That was easily like the highlight of the show for me. That was I remember watching it and I mean, like, okay, the show is capable of being good. Now can we get more of this? And
yes, when it did that, like, I thought, okay, this is what Trigger is going to be. I'm excited now. And then it completely lost it, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about why we think it might have wound up leaning so heavily on Tiga specifically. You know, it's the 25th anniversary, and but plenty of times a 25th anniversary happens without this much fanfare, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think for there's a number of reasons, but Tiga is a a legendary show across so many territories. Like, Tiga is really important in Japan because it was the rebirth of the series. Like we said, it's like the TNG of Ultraman, to the point where I think there are even fans who probably go, I like Tiga more than any other Ultraman, even classic Ultraman, because it's just, it's what they've grown up with. It's what's so iconic.
Right.
And then in China, it is massive. It was a huge hit there. And same kind of deal. And, you know, spoilers, there are a lot of people in China. I don't know if we know, if people know that.
Oh, no, my what God. The fuck?
Yeah, it's crazy, actually. Like, there's a good number of people
there. You think there's at least 10 there?
Probably around that.
God damn, that's a lot of people.
And then in North America, there is the, you know, obviously Ultraman is not as popular in North America as it is in other regions and territories. And that also doesn't even mention, like, South Asia Pacific, which, again, massive, massive numbers of Ultraman fans there, arguably more than Japan. But in North America, we had the 4Kids broadcast and we had the DVD sets. So of what Ultraman content our generation has consumed, Tiga is probably their most likely exposure. So,
in fact, this is a good segue. My first actual exposure, like, to an actual episode of Ultraman, not like reading it on like a Godzilla website,
yeah,
on like GeoCities back in the late 90s, was an episode of Tiga on the Fox Box.
Yeah,
it was the episode of Daemon, the little monster in the little circus. That was my first ever Ultraman episode.
Yeah.
Do you know what I thought at the time?
What?
I must have woken up too early. I missed all the cartoons.
I have thoughts about that dub, but we'll let that be.
Yeah. That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, you know, thoughts about the dub aside, I know some people may have grown up watching Great in its airing. My first Ultraman anything was actually the Ultraman Great video game for Super Nintendo.
I'm sorry.
And then
you mean that form of corporal punishment?
Yeah. But then Tiga aired and then the Tiga DVDs came out, which, you know, thank God they were subbed. I still want the dub on DVD, but
I think it should be preserved for sure. I don't think any piece of media should go away forever, but I do think as bad as the dub is, it should at least be like on a bonus disc, or they should release a Tiga dub that they pay you to buy it.
Tiga, he shows up in the Ultraman X movie. He had the single most successful Ultraman theatrical film, and I think it still holds his record, is a movie where you get to see the cast of Ultraman, Tiga, Dinah, and Gaia reunited as alternate versions of themselves, Super 8 Ultraman brothers.
Yeah,
great film.
Great film, finally coming out in March here. So, like, Tiga is, you know, I feel like Tiga's second only to, like, Ultraman and Ultra 7 in terms of popularity. So, I get the thinking behind, let's do a new Tiga.
Especially since, like, you know, they kind of did, oh, 7's popular, let's give 7 a kid. Oh, Taro's popular, let's give Taro a kid. You can't really do that with
Tiga lore-wise. Everyone has children now.
Everyone has kids now.
I guess Shinjiro counts from the manga because he's Hayata and Ultraman's kid.
Yeah.
So
that's three Ultraman babies we got. So
Tiga and canon, you know, Daigo does have
Daigo's
kids, but
Daigo has his Daigo's also Tiga's descendant too, if I'm remembering right. It's kind of wacky, but point being, I could see where that logic of we gave every popular Ultraman so far a baby. We can't really do that with Tiga due to lore. Why don't we just do Tiga again? Why don't we make a new Tiga for a new generation?
Well, and I also think, and maybe Kevin, you're alluding to this, so, you know, I don't mean to steal your thunder, but, like, as we all know, there are fairly significant rights issues with Daigo's appearance and with the involvement of Johnny's and Take Me Higher, and, like, Tiga, despite being a massive success, actually has a bit of a rights tie-up, especially when it comes to international markets. So if I was, like, an executive at Tsuburaya, and I was like, man, we make a lot of money off Tiga merch, but I wish we could just make a brand new tea or reboot it so we could sell our own version anywhere without any problems. Then the idea of making a new generation Tiga clicks, you know, like
that makes sense, because, like, you know, when Ultraman was wrapped up with the whole Chiyo thing, they had Neos showing up in car commercials and the Japan Tourist board commercial. So, like, I could see the logic behind it of, like, let's just do Neos, but it's Ultraman. And also, we don't have to worry about involving the character of Daigo anymore. If we do Tiga, we could just have a new guy who's essentially Tiga.
Right. And they just were able to figure out the streaming rights for Tiga for the Super Aya Imagination recently, right? So that's another thing, that it's a synergistic cross promotion there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and that's I mean, I kind of stand having to talk about that, because one of the things I did for Vintage Henshin was the disappearance of Ultraman Tiga, which, like, talked about that. And I want to add to that I feel that it's kind of interesting how that came about shortly after Mary Kitagawa passed away. And it's like, she was the last holdout. So I just want to point that out to everybody. It's like, I don't think it's ever been confirmed, but part of me has to wonder just the timing of that. They're just like, wait, she's gone. Go, 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 go. But yeah, no, like, it's such a convoluted situation. If you ever want a breakdown, like, this is not just a shameless plug, although now it's sounding like a shameless plug.
No, I
it's if you ever want a breakdown of the situation that makes sense, you know, but is now slightly out of date because everything imploded shortly after that episode came out, go to Vintage Tension, just go watch it.
It's a good recap.
Yeah,
it is.
I swear that is the only plug I will make. No.
Continue.
But yeah, but that's really it. Yeah, it's in general, just that whole situation is wild, and I can respect them for trying to do that, but I feel like there are some instances in this whole thing where I feel like they kind of zigged where they should have zagged.
Mm-hmm. I'll add two other kind of points of framework. One is, if I were purely a uncreative executive, I could look at the success that Tsuburaya had with the Gridman remake / sequel that's kind of both, actually animated by a studio called Trigger, and no, say, no, hey. This is what people want. They want that nostalgia push within a new series, that soft reboot. These are hot. If you look at Hollywood, that's obviously what's
going on. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, it worked for our 25th anniversary of Gridman. Our next hot property was Ultraman Tiga after Gridman, right? So, let's do the same there. And another frame of another data point in the popularity of Tiga overall is that if you look at the Japanese science fiction awards, the Seiyan, the Nebula Awards, Ultraman Tiga was the only show in the Ultraman franchise that had won one until Ultraman Z. So that's kind of a change of focus, I think. That suddenly Ultraman Z was, I think, overperforming from where they were expecting to be. And this is an entire other conversation that we'll segue into. But coming off of one award winner, why not try to keep that momentum rolling with let's harken back to our previous award winner before that. So. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say that nobody was expecting Ultraman Z to be as big of a hit as it was.
Mm.
And I think that if you were to look at some of the context clues of, you know, the Ultraman Taiga movie being called New Generation Final, and, you know, Ultraman Z, you know, if you think about other things, like Dragon Ball Z was supposed to be the end of Dragon Ball. So you might have thought, like, well, maybe it's possible that the Ultraman new generation is going to come to a close. There seem to be things in the news that were kind of alluding to that sort of when the initial press was going out for these shows. It seems like the new generation is continuing for now. Yeah. But,
well, and to give some you know more credence to that is if we look at the television ratings of the new generation shows, and for those who don't know, I mean, because sometimes ratings can sound like a bit of a black box. Basically, it's episode viewership divided by the market size, i.e., how many people are watching TV. So if you have 100 people watching a show and 1,000 people watching TV at that time, you take, you know, your 100 divided by 1,000, you'll get 0.1, I think, is what that would be.
Yeah.
And that's going to be your viewership that shows, hey, how many people watching TV were watching this show? So, you know, for what it's worth, in the new generation series, things generally hovered around, you know, Ginga was 1.4, Ginga S was 1.3, X was 1.2, Orb was 1.2, and Geed was 1.4, kind of on average. And then Rube dropped to 1.1 on average, and then Taiga dropped to 0.9, the first time that the whole series had ever dropped below a 1% rating.
Oh,
and
boy.
Taiga's high was not as high as previous series averages. So, you know, I certainly would look at that and go, geez, you know, Ultraman is maybe heading in a direction that needs some course correction. And it almost feels like they're like, yeah, you know what, let's just make Ultraman Z. It's going to be the end. Do whatever you want. Like some psychopath was like, I want to bring back Savenger from Ultraman Leo. And they were just like, sure, sure, man, do whatever. Here, tell you what, we're going to throw it on YouTube too, because who cares? And then I think it just blew up. I cannot get ratings data for Z, but from what I understand, and this is just pure speculation, I don't really have the data to back this up, it is the most successful new gen show by a significant margin.
I think, to go off of that, I recall when Zet aired, every time there would be an episode that would air, I would log onto twitter.com and I would see just people freaking the fuck out over what just happened. Like, oh my god, juggling, it's like the captain's really juggler, or oh my god, they have a king, Storage is a King Joe now, or did you see that episode with Bolton and Haruki's dad? That was so sad. Oh man, fucking Grisa showed up, dude. Ah, fuck, Destroy Zero is actually a monster, man.
Yeah, there was always something, and it was always like, that show was like ramping up every goddamn time.
And it just had all this different, like, even the recap, when they brought Kanagon back, and I was guilty of that. I fucking lost my shit because Kanagon's my favorite monster. And I never thought he would be in an Ultraman show. I'm sure he would come back for like an Ultra Q kind of thing, but like an Ultraman show, a mainline Ultraman show, I didn't think was possible. And then, when Trigger aired, I wouldn't see outside of like the Power Dada episodes and the finale, which I'll get to in a minute, it would be very quiet around Friday evenings and the weekend. There wouldn't be as much hype about what just happened.
There was definitely hype going into it.
A lot of, like, I remember that when that first episode aired and they had the Mars setting and they blew up Golba with like the little model like they did in the 90s, people were like, oh, this is going to be like a return to form to like the second golden era of Ultraman. This is going to be really cool. And then it really kind of just petered out. Like, I wouldn't even call it, like, the reception I saw bad. It was just quiet. There wasn't much going on. There wasn't a whole lot of buzz.
Yeah, like, the momentum just kind of quieted. Like, it slowed to a crawl.
Yeah, I
think that Zet had a couple of strong things going for it. First of all, going to YouTube was genius.
Because that
really, in addition to allowing everyone around the world to watch the episodes, it lets people in Japan easily catch up on episodes that they have missed. So I think that piece of novelty really played up well. In addition to that, you have the pandemic, where suddenly a lot of people are kind of home with less new entertainment coming out. So, you know, what's there is immediately more appealing.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is that they, you know, really let Kitaka Taguchi do whatever he wanted. And he is really one of those visionaries when it comes to crazy effects pieces that make for good, you know, 30-second clips that you can upload to your Twitter and show to people and have them go, wow.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that, too. Like, you know, just remember, you remember the Baraba episode of Zet, where like, he and Baraba mm-hmm. were fighting in the background. He had all the scared guys in front recording it, and then
yeah.
the fireball. Oh, my God. That was such a great episode.
Well, every episode of Zet had a moment where it felt like the special effects team was just like, we got to outdo ourselves.
Yeah. It was serial escalation at its best. Like, yeah. they wanted you to remember each episode as like, oh, that was better than the last one. How is next week going to top this? And
yeah, it was very like Batman the Animated Series logic, where it's like every episode has to have a set piece, so we can be like, oh, the one with the giant clock, or oh, yeah. the one with the aerial one take, or
yeah,
that whole thing.
And you see a little bit of that towards the beginning of Trigger, where there's just occasionally like shots that feel really out of place with the rest of it, because you can tell that this is where somebody got out their GoPro.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of falls off as the series continues.
Yeah.
Yeah. They stopped that fast, which was a good thing.
They still do some impressive effects shots throughout the series, but it wasn't like I swear it was almost every episode there. I was like, holy shit, they just built a force perspective road and rotated it as King Joe reached forward to make it look like he was big. You know, like yeah. every episode did something wild. With Trigger, I feel like the Toku was solid, but it didn't have that same wild factor in everything.
Yeah, it this is not to throw shade on the people who made Trigger, because they've done some great things before, and I think they did decently well on Trigger in the right. special effects department. I thought, again, I think the show was pretty good special effects wise and choreography wise. Like, I think it was pretty, you know, it was pretty good. It's not like Zet or like X or Orb though. But you know, it's a serviceable Ultraman show. Like, I've got yeah. no major qualms against what the tokusatsu was in Trigger, except for two of the monster suits, because I'm a monster nerd, and I'll get to that in a minute. But
the for me though, I think it was like, I think it was episode two that like I my sort of feeling towards the effects kind of diminished, because you had like the 3D camera effect, and they did that really well in Zet. Like when that happened in Zet, they rose the tension, like the music exploded. We had never seen it before. You know, then you have episode one, which kind of like escalated that, where they were doing like these over under shots that were absolutely wonderful. And like I thought they were beautiful. Like, that whole sequence was amazing.
Yes.
And like just that whole final battle, like there was so much, like the fight in the mud, the rain, yeah, like, so much of that was great. And then they did the exact same thing on Earth, and I think it just felt like, you know, Sakamoto's biggest problem, which is he doesn't know how to hide the trees very well.
Yes.
And also there's a kind of a cardinal rule for me when it comes to like giant fights, which is never show the floor unless you're doing something really interesting with it.
Yeah.
And they didn't, like, you know, when they did the over and Trigger hits the ground and there's no craters or impact or anything, that's where that entire sequence fell apart. Like, at that moment, I'm just like, all right, I'm not invested in this anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Then, you know, there were still those great moments, like, you know, like, Taguchi, holy hell. Like, the stuff, you know, there were, like, the scenes that he worked on. But then I think, for me, it was Taguchi's Tiga episode, where they straight up did the kind of the grand finale. slight spoilers, Tiga comes back.
I've got opinions about that episode, but
we'll get there. Yeah, but I will say the final battle of that episode was pretty satisfying.
Yes, I agree.
And you could tell that like Taguchi's like, okay, we're gonna make this rough and tumble as possible, but we're just gonna break the lever off. Let's go, and he did, and it was good. I mean, it was a little too chaotic at times, but I really dug that. But in general, like, you know, I just was not like there were those moments, but they felt too very far in between. The final episode of Trigger like had like maybe like two memorable moments, but that's really it. It's just, it's serviceable, and like if you put it in a sizzle reel, it's gonna look good. But as a whole, like, you know, separated from itself, like it could be a good thing. Like if you edited the whole thing down to like an ultra fight, yeah, it could be good. But it's like, you know, like in combination with the story and context, everything else, it just feels very
good. Like I this is something I've been thinking about, but like I love this show to death, but Ultraman Leo looks like they had the budget. Like everything looks like they got stuff out of their garage and they're like, okay, let's try to make an Ultraman show. And don't get me wrong, despite that kind of like rinky dink quality of Leo, I think it's still a must see Ultraman show because the characters and the stories it throws out at you are entertaining for what they're worth. And I think there's some, you know, genuinely good, intense episodes in there.
At the very least, it has like the best opener. One of the best openers ever.
Yes, until they change it midway through the show. But
I mean the opening episodes rather, like because episodes 1 and 2 are like to me like one of the best ways to start an Ultraman series.
Like I think episode 1 and 2 are really good. I think the crossover with the Ultra Brothers when they fight Leo is really good. And
there's
a couple episodes in the middle like where Go shows up and gives Seminger is a really good episode, or the episode with Satan Beetle is really good, and I think the final arc with the Saucer Beasts is one of the most distressing and dark Ultraman arcs ever. Mm. It starts off good, and that penultimate episode is literally out of a horror movie. It ends with the children lynch mob. Like Leo, even at its worst, tends to be very memorable and entertaining.
Right.
But with Trigger, you could have a show that looks great. You could have these really great designs and fight choreography. You could have some pretty good tokusatsu. But like, if it's not hitting, like, why should I care about watching it if it's not hitting that other itch?
Which is, right.
Why? What's the point of the show if it's just going to do Tiga again? Like, why should I be invested in this?
Right. And it just feels like it never quite answers that question.
Exactly.
I can't even say like, oh, it was just a rehash of Tiga, because like it felt nothing like Tiga to me. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was wearing the skin of Tiga. It was wearing the skin of Tiga Final Odyssey.
Yes. It feels like somebody watched that movie and looked up what some of the fan favorite episodes were, and then just took like the very superficial, like, oh yeah, people like the Gazort episode because Gazort.
Yeah.
Well, and not because of any of like the actual like horror elements and stuff throughout and stuff like that.
Or like Gazort was a character. Like,
yeah.
Gazort had a motivation. He talked. Like there was.
Yeah.
There was stuff going on with Gazort, and in addition to Gazort, wasn't just like a minion that was thrown out. I hate this with some of the more recent Ultraman shows, where the kaiju are just like they're goons, and like there's in the Showa era stuff and the other Heisei stuff. Obviously, you're gonna have like guys or villains like Yapool or whatever alien throwing out a monster, but that monster usually is the crux of the episode. That monster represents the conflict in the story. It's not just the dumb muscle.
Yeah.
But like there's a trend in the new generation shows, like with some of them like Ginga and Rube, and I think Geed to an extent, where the villain is going about his plan and the heroes show up and they're like, oh, you're bad. And he's like, well, I have an evil Bandai toy that allows me to summon any Ultraman monster I wish. And he summons the monster as a goon. And then they fight the monster, and because they need to have a monster fight in the episode because it's Ultraman. And yeah. I think Taiga and Zet managed to get away from that, and then we have Trigger. And I knew we were in trouble once episode 3 rolled around, and Gazort, who hasn't been seen in 25 years, a monster like Alex said, has a lot of personality, a motivation, a genuine character, and who in Tiga, the critters that make up Gazort, or should I say the clitters?
Why'd you have to remind me of that? No,
I had
no.
to. I'm sorry.
Why?
They were an arc. They had like 2 episodes devoted to them, and there was like a couple episodes devoted to driving them off of the planet. And there was like a deep debate for a Japanese monster show about what do we do with this species that we can't coexist with that is native to the Earth? What do we do? Is it wrong to wipe them out? And then in Trigger, Gazort shows up for 5 minutes. He's summoned by the bad guys. He's in a stage show suit, so he looks kind of frumpy. He runs around a little bit. He says his catchphrase out of context, and then he's blown up, and then we never see Gazort again.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you mentioned that that formula where the kaiju are goons used by a villain, and what's interesting is, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of that formula either. I do prefer when the kaiju are actually the crux of the narrative. But
yes,
in a show like Rube, for example, it works because you've got a villain who has their, you know, own motivations, and yes, who is like not an ultra, not some kind of, you know, powerful creature. Like they're doing this to try to achieve something. They have a goal, and they maybe don't even know who Ultraman is. They maybe don't even know how to get in contact with them. But in this show, it establishes pretty early on that the three dark giants are supposed to be very powerful, and they can basically warp in and out of wherever the plot demands they be. They can teleport, they can do all this kind of stuff, and yet they will, when they could clearly just probably beat Trigger, like there's nothing the story tells us is the reason they couldn't beat Trigger, they instead summon a monster, and then they go, we're just going to retreat now, a young girl, a 17-year-old girl, will slap one in the face, on his armored face, and that will be what prevents him from achieving his goal of kidnapping.
Yeah, like, because, like,
they're Super Sentai villains.
And that works for Super Sentai, but, like, Ultraman's a bit of a different beast, especially since, like, we've had shows where we have an evil Ultraman kind of in the shadows, like... spoiler alert for our giant spaceman melodrama shows that I'm about to bring up. But like we've got Ultraman Nexus, which, you know, has like three evil Ultramen running around.
Yeah.
But they were working behind the scenes. They didn't come out all at the same time, and they weren't hanging out all the same time, you know, growling, "Oh, we'll get Ultraman Nexus this time." They were proactive in what they were doing. They were doing things incognito, not to, you know, be disturbed on what they're doing. And then you have Ultraman Taiga, where sometimes Trigger would show up, but he was more content with like, oh, I'm going to kill the side. I'm going to do something that will make the side character of the week get killed off because I'm an asshole like that.
Yeah, Trigger was like at least entertaining with the way he had played the cat and mouse game. Like he was the wild card and.
I was gonna say even elephant in the room, like Belial, like
Belial
too. Yes, but no, Belial did pretty well in Geed too, because Geed let it make you think that K was Belial, like, oh, is he depowered? And it's like, no, Belial is behind the scenes. Yeah. He's letting K...
They ramped up the tension pretty well with that. Like, that felt like the proper end game.
Yes.
But whereas like these guys, like here's the thing, like I will admit that. I was a sucker for Carmera or whatever.
Yeah.
I really liked your suit design.
I think the designs for the Dark Giants and Trigger are wonderful. They're such great looking villains.
I generally loved just that whole tortured like love, like, you know, unrequited love story that was happening. I was a sucker for it. I was just kind of like, you know, like her on the fringe, like just go like slowly kind of losing it over it. Like I was kind of like, you know, and no, this does not say anything about me personally. I swear to God. No, I do not want giant women to step. I have a friend who does have that though, like problem. Like he was going on about the he was going on about a new character in Revice, and it's like, oh yeah, she's great, wonderful. Please let her step on me. And I'm like, dude, I didn't need to know that about you. But but Carmira, like to me, like she was like the most interesting. Like the most interesting. Like I would have loved to have seen more done with her before. The show just kind of was like, oh, well, she's just a bad guy now, and she's doing, if I can't have him, no one will, thanks.
Yeah.
I just wish it wasn't the exact same thing we got in Final Odyssey.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes,
that's the problem, because, like...
there was so much potential, and it just, he squandered it.
Dargon and Hoodram, they, to me, despite being based off of Final Odyssey's characters, they feel different enough. Like, I can look at them and go, oh, these are pastiches of previous evil Ultraman, but they work in that same way that like Ultraman and Jack and Great and Powered and Neos all kind of like, you know, follow that same template that Ultraman set up, but they feel different. But Carmira or Carmilla or Cammy or whatever you want to call her, there's like three or four different spellings.
Cammy, darling, welcome, you know, like coming over to the set tomorrow. No, I'm stopping that.
There's like three or four different spellings for this character. And they're very similar to three or four different spellings for the character she's based on. And they both look very similar, and they have basically the same role. So forgive me here.
Yeah.
I guess that shows Carmilla how
and Carmilla, right?
Cammy. I'm going to call her Cammy from now on.
I'm okay with that. Cammy's my favorite Street Fighter character.
Cammy. So Cammy, I wish they expanded upon, and this, and I'm going to use this to segue into one of my biggest problems with this show. But no, I wish they expanded on what is her goal. As the leader of the Dark Demons, of these four guys, what is her goal? What are these guys' master plan in this show, in this universe? What are they working towards? But we don't get that. And which I'm going to use as a segue into one of my least favorite things about the show, is they turned Ultraman Tiga, which is essentially a show, an Ultraman show, but updated for the 90s, and with a healthy dash of the Cthulhu mythos thrown in. They decide, no, instead of doing anything like that, we need to make it a MacGuffin show. There's a MacGuffin, but it's not a hunt for a MacGuffin. The MacGuffin is there. We find out about it, but they want the girl to open the MacGuffin's house up. They want to go into the house of the MacGuffin. They need the girl. Yeah. They need her dead, or they need her ring finger or whatever.
Yeah.
And they want to get this MacGuffin, and this MacGuffin is the Eternity Core. And this Eternity Core, which looks like the sun, is powerful enough to maybe reset the universe or something or other. And these bad guys, these evil ultras, they want this ultimate power. But why? Good question. We don't know.
Yeah.
And again, spoilers for Final Odyssey, which at this point I feel like you should watch because it's a very, very good movie.
Drinking game at this point for every spoiler in this episode, every spoiler warning, I think you should be at six. So your shots.
Okay. So in Final Odyssey, we find out Tiga was evil at one point with his buddies and his girlfriend. And there was a war between the good ultras and the bad ultras. And then Tiga was like, you know what? Maybe being an asshole sucks. And he turned good. And his friends were like, no, that's really weird. What the fuck? Why would you do that? And then he froze them in stone. And then they wake up 30 million years later and like, you know, Tiga's kind of an asshole. Let's kick his ass. and that's their motivation in the movie. And I think that's such a great petty motivation. But in Trigger, they have the motivation of, we want to kick Trigger's ass, but also we want this magical sun to do something bad with. We want to be bad with it.
Yeah.
Why? They're the only game in town. They're not at war with any other ultras. There are no other dark ultras other than them. Like, they essentially run rampant on prehistoric Earth, unopposed, aside from the 16-year-old girl with a magic ring, who can barely hold off against these four bad guys.
Oh my God, she was a Green Lantern the whole time.
She was a Green Lantern the whole time. And why, if I was a dark giant, I don't think I would feel that insecure about my position to be like, I need the sun. I need this magical sun device to blow up the universe for some reason. I'd be like, no, I'll just squish her. I can summon monsters. I'll just squish this chick. I just wonder, what is the point of this? Of what is their grand motivation? We don't get a plan like we do with some of the other Dark Ultras, who usually, like, you know, the Dark Ultras in these other shows. Oh, we were created to be bad, or we were corrupted to be bads. But it's like, you know, that.
But why though?
But why though? Why for these guys? Like, even if they had like a throwaway line in like the flashback episode that the Dark Giants were the remnants of the darkness and the time before the Big Bang, and they want to return to that time, I would have accepted that. That would have been like, okay, we got our motivation. That's cool.
Yeah.
But we don't get that. We don't get any idea of why these characters are doing what they're doing, aside from this is an Ultraman show and we need some villains.
Right.
So along those lines, and maybe you can explain this better to me, I feel like Trigger Dark makes no sense.
Yes, he doesn't.
He's a fake out.
Is it? Are you talking about Trigger Dark? Are you talking about the redesign of Mimos from Gaia, because he's just Mimos?
He's Mimos. God,
he kind of is, isn't he?
I actually
do. I love his design. In full disclosure, I really like Trigger Dark's design, but he feels like a victim of serious rewriting, and I don't think any of us will dispute that it feels like Trigger was being rewritten up until the final episode.
I
so many plot threads that go nowhere.
So
I mean, there's that, and I remember that like a lot of the show was already in the can like by the time it was coming out.
I don't know how much of it was.
Yeah,
I feel like with Trigger, with every other Ultraman show that has recently come out, you know, and there's a pattern. There's with the new generation shows, there's sort of a formula to things. Usually, what we have a prologue or a flashback that establishes the setting, like the main conflict in the setting. We have the Dark Spark Wars. We've got Orban. We've got Belial blowing up the universe. We got the Rube brothers falling to Earth and becoming the Pogs or whatever. We got Trigger trying to invade the Land of Light. You know, something happens that the villain does that affects the Ultras early on, and then the rest of the show is like about that aftermath. And you can obviously tell at some point, like midway through, you get an idea of, oh, I know where this is going now. I know exactly, maybe not exactly, but you get an idea of where this conflict is going to end up at, and that makes and it makes sense when it ends up there. With Trigger, like once they introduced Trigger Dark and the whole time travel thing happened, it just felt like I had no idea where the show was going to go.
I had no clue what was going on.
I think unpredictability can work with Ultraman, but I also feel like when you're doing an arc-driven show, especially one that's a lot more serialized than the other serialized shows we've had.
Yeah.
And I'm not really able to pick up on the story beats or the themes to get an idea of where we might be going. I think that can be trouble. For the most part,
I would like to just list out a few things that were either characters or concepts that are introduced and then almost immediately dropped.
Yes.
Very briefly, at the end of an episode, Carmilla, whatever, Cammy, shows up in a human form, leading me to believe, oh, this will be a new element to the show. She can, you know, that'll, you know, kind of like what happened in Rube, where there's a human villain.
Yeah, Saki. Villain.
Nope, doesn't happen. Relay, the plant. You know, I think I saw a really funny note on the Ultraman Reddit, which was, subverting our expectations, the plant really is just a plant.
I was thinking the plant was going to become, they were going to turn the plant into a kaiju, or like,
I was thinking it would do anything. I mean,
this is going to be really dumb, but like when the episode, the final episode ended, I thought this is going to sound really stupid, but when Kengo goes to the Eternity Core, I was imagining that they were going to be sad, and they were going to water the plant, and then a baby Kengo would pop out of it. like he was reborn. So like,
see, I was expecting at least an episode related to Gijira from Tiga.
Yeah,
you know, there is a famous plant kaiju in Tiga.
Yeah,
nothing. Yeah, I mean, literally, just a plant.
Like, I was expecting it, like, for, like, all hell to break loose. It's like...
Lovecraft like, game and everything.
Yeah, yes. it's like we did it. We saved everything. Like, it just breaks through and all this wipes out the fucking...
And then it's like episode 40 of Leo. Like, we see the characters... We see Gut Select get, like, digested alive by a horrible plan.
Oh, that would have been great! Like, I would have loved, like, a total, like, game changer like that. It's like, all of a sudden, the team's gone. Yeah. And, like, they have to try and find them, and that's the second half of the show.
That would have been fun. I would have dug that.
Well, yeah. And that's not all. I've still got a list of a few other things that led nowhere in this show.
Oh, boy. All right, everyone. So this is the point where you're going to get comfortable. You're going to get nice and cozy. You're gonna break out the hot cocoa. And you're going to put on some nice, chill music. I prefer something from, like, the Ultra 7 soundtrack. Something like that, or like, you know, like just something like one of the more like casual tracks, just get nice and cozy and just make yourself ready for this. All right, here we go. All right, I'm almost set. Let's do it.
for this one, I want to set the stage because I watched this show weekly as it aired, but there were some times where I would due to other commitments I'd have to miss it. So I remember watching the episode where, spoilers, Tiga shows up, and I was like, okay, this is, you know, kind of cool from a cool factor of just Tiga's here, but I was like, where is this going? He shows up at the end of the episode, and I missed next week's episode, but I saw my my friend Steve, and I said, oh, or no, I think it was Chris, and I said, hey, so like, where did the Tiga thing net out? Well, you know, how did the next episode explain where he came from? Nothing at all. It was literally Tiga shows up and then Tiga disappears. How it happened, why it happened, or what kind of ramifications it has, not touched on, not even hinted.
I sort of understand how it happened, but I also hate how it happened because I hate Shizuma as a character. I utterly loathe him.
Yeah.
So I remember when I was watching that episode and he was about to summon Tiga. I thought he was going to turn into Tiga, and I was about ready just to fucking close the screen. I was like, I'm done with this fucking show.
His character is on my list here of things that aren't.
I have a rant about this guy, so I'm looking forward to that.
I think it's just like let fly now at this point. Now you've set us up.
If Alex is okay with that, I know he has a very long list.
Well, the only other major thing on the list was like, what is Trigger Dark? Is Trigger Dark evil? Is Trigger Dark Tiga? What's going on there? But yeah, the captain being from another dimension is just mentioned in an episode, and then everyone's just like, okay.
I like how his name was originally Trigger Dark, and then he turns good and is renamed to Trigger. It's like kind of a predestination thing.
It's like, okay, so you're Trigger 2, and then you have Trigger 1, like, what? Why?
I will say, I do hope that when Trigger Dark shows up, because one of the things I did like about the show is Ignis. I thought he was a great character. I kind of think he should have been the main
character. Ignis should have been the lead.
Ignis should have been the Trigger,
What a fun character. I love him.
I mean, he was kind of channeling his Gokaiger character, wasn't
he? Yes, he was. He was very much Bosco, but less of an asshole.
I ended up calling him on that for the Ultraman Day holiday special.
I remember sitting there. I was like, of course Mike would.
Because there's a question I threw it in chat. I didn't think he was going to get asked, and sure enough, I hear it. It's like, how does the treasure hunter personality come to you so naturally? And dude dies.
he is probably one of my favorite I guess tertiary ultras.
Oh, absolutely.
Depending on how we count Ultraman nowadays, I don't know how they do it, but no, he's fun. I like him a lot. He has a lot of charisma. He's got a drive, a motivation, a goal. He's a good guy, but he's kind of got that, you know, that rogue element to him that you never know.
He's the wild card.
And he's great. I hope he returns in some capacity in some future shows and movies as Trigger Dark, and I'm hoping they keep Trigger Dark his form as just, you know, creepy looking Mimos motherfucker Ultraman.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about Geed is that he looks like a villain, but he's a good guy. So give us another Ultraman that's like that. Shake it up a bit. But You know, he was one of the best aspects of the show. As a side.
Well, I think to lead into, I mean, unless Kevin has something else he wants us to chat about, I would love to hear people's thoughts on the cast, not just Ultraman himself, but also the supporting cast of you know.
You mean the collection the of cliches?
They were there.
What a good cast in terms of like tokusatsu veterans. Like if you look at like Gut Select, it's all made up of like, you know, like it's much crap as we talk about, you know, Shizuma. Like we liked it when he was getting menaced by giant sea lice in Return of Godzilla, right?
So. Yeah.
I loved it when he was trying to hit on the pilot of a giant robot in Godzilla against Mechagodzilla.
Like, again, I think the cast, the actors have done great things. They have the talent. They are capable, but they're not given a whole lot to work with.
Nope.
In a traditional Ultraman show, our Science Patrol of the year, our whatever you want to call them, Science Patrol, Monster Attack Team.
Yeah.
Mido. Support team. Yeah, our pals. We usually get one or two out in the field with our Ultraman friend, and they have different personalities that play off of each other, and we'll then get like a focus episode on them. Like X did that really well. Zet did a few of that. Like Taiga did really well with that too. We'll get like a focus episode with them, and we'll get to see them interact with the wider world. And in Trigger, I'm sorry, I almost said Taiga, which is a much better show. But in Trigger, they're on the Nurse Desi, and we never see them do anything outside of Yuna and Akito, which thankfully they got quite a bit of development. But like, they're everyone else, Maruluru, the captain, the pilot girl, and the shop owner from Geed, who's now a muscle guy.
Yeah.
And the other captain, like, they just kind of exist on the ship. Like if the show had explained, oh, they're holograms. they're ship AI. They're not actually people. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. That's why they can't leave. But they're people. And yet they're stuck on the ship, divorced from the greater world. Which I think is a shame based on, you know, their acting prowess.
I felt so bad for Kengo's actor. Like, I felt so bad for him because dude clearly was having the time of his life, and he was doing the best he could with the material they gave him.
That's sort of the thing. Like, I know for a while, like around episode 3, I know a lot of people on Twitter did not like Kengo. I admittedly didn't. That's the thing, though.
He's Diet Gintaro. He's Diet Gintaro from Forza.
Yeah, he's Diet Gintaro. But like, some of the live shows he's been in, and like some of the other episodes that like, you know, give him stuff to work with, he's not bad. He does a pretty good
job.
The
episodes where he's playing off of Haruki from Ultraman Z,
it's the best.
Hilarious and fantastic. I was like, that's how you treat this character.
Like, he's got a good comedic vibe going on. Like, I could see him being sort of in the same mold of like Kotaro.
Yeah,
from Taro, kind of.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
like, absolutely. Like, I think, and I personally think that if Trigger was more like a Taro or Max version of Tiga, versus like Tiga, but as the Tiga movie as a TV show, I think it would have succeeded a little bit better. Like, do a parody of Tiga. Why not? Like, let's get silly with it.
If it was a parody of Tiga, I think it would have worked better.
I think it would have too, because like you look at the Zet episode. And the Zet episode is great. Like, you have the characters doing stuff, and there's like a genuine thread in there, but like they're funny and they're bouncing off of each other. And, you know, it feels like an actual Ultraman show. Or like, I actually think, and this is a weird opinion to have, but I think Trigger's recap episode is one of my favorites because you had Maruluru, who thinks the captain has been murdered, becomes a detective, and he starts, you know, searching around the base for clues on who murdered the captain. And it's really goofy and silly. And like, you know, it's not of much consequence, but like it has that sort of like same goofy madcap energy that I think works for Trigger. And
like, Tenshin is such a goofy character, like this guy that's like obsessed with lifting weights or whatever, like give him an episode.
I think it would have been funny if like Tenshin and like what if Tenshin got abducted by like, you know, oh, you could here's a Tiga episode they could have referenced. They could have done the aliens from Tiga, Abdulus and Reddle, the two aliens who hate each other. And if you remember that episode, Abdulus is abducting athletes to be used as soldiers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And what you could have done is have Tenshin get abducted by him. And it's revealed that this evil alien has been abducting all of these weightlifters for a space weightlifting competition or something. Or something goofy like that.
Space Sasuke, basically.
Yeah, Space Sasuke. Like go silly with it. Like, lean into those characters. Like, the Falcon chick who drove the guts drone, her name was. She was really great in the Dada episode because, like, you know, you took this attribute of her and now she has to play a shoot 'em up to stop Dada from infecting the Nurse Desi computer. Yeah. That was great. I remember I laughed so hard when the computer menu came up and it was just a title screen for a bullet hole game. And I was just like, This is what the show needs more of. It needs to just kind of like get loose with it. Yeah. Like,
it's also funny because and I remember I was watching an episode with Kevin on Discord. I don't remember which episode it was. It was pretty early on, but Kevin just mentioned that he was like, you know, it's kind of weird that it feels like Gut Select is six people and they've dedicated two of their members to like, you know, managing traffic.
Like,
the scope of Guts and the whole worldwide organization to defend Earth against kaiju and aliens in Tiga is actually so fleshed out to the point where not secondary but tertiary characters like the nurse get episodes, and in Trigger we can't even have the main cast all get an episode or even, you know, treat the concept of Gut Select actually seriously. You know, it does feel like they have this massive battleship that is manned by six people. I don't even know if it's six, but either way, it's not, there's such a huge shift in tone between the Heisei generation Ultraman shows and the new generation that I'm not even sure if it would ever make sense to try to make a new Tiga, because even the most quote unquote serious new generation shows are still way funnier and sillier than the Heisei stuff, and I don't necessarily say that as a negative.
No,
it's just their style, and I feel like Trigger is a bit of a square peg round hole situation.
Yeah,
like Geed, I would say, is probably one of the most serious new generation shows. I don't think that's a controversial opinion, but like Geed has like the Pega, who's like a cute kind of funny mascot.
Yeah.
And you've also got one of my favorite host dynamics with Zero and Leto, and Leto just trying to be a regular, you know, father and salaryman, and Zero being the hero he transforms into who takes over his body. Like that's really funny. That was one of the best parts of Geed.
Yeah.
And that's a show that shows off, like, that's probably Sakamoto's best Ultraman show by far.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah.
Like, I'm fine with Ultraman being silly. Like, I think Ultraman is at its best when it's able to kind of balance those two in a series.
Right.
Yeah. That's why, like, you know, I really like the original show for sure, because, you know, you've got episodes like the Telus Dawn episode, which is genuinely creepy, and you got the Jamula episode, which is really sad, and then you've got also stuff like the Skydawn episode, which is one of the funniest tokusatsu episodes ever. And, you know, theoretically, it should work with Trigger, because they've been working on this formula for so long, starting with Ginga, but the drama doesn't really interest me that much. Compared to like when Trigger decides, oh, we're going to be goofy this episode. We're going to have Mara Luru going on Zillow and like freaking out because he can't buy a house, which is more interesting than, oh, Trigger used to be evil, and he betrayed his girlfriend and his two friends to be a good guy. And I think that's just kind of the major fault of the show, is that it doesn't fit, you know, that sort of atmosphere that Ultraman, that we know it as of recently, kind of fits, where it can kind of pinball between these two extremes pretty well and find a nice middle ground.
Well, another thing is that the New Generation series by nature are so backwardsly referential that it's one of those things where it's weird that, like, oh, this is a series that's celebrating Tiga, where one of the members of the crew is a Metron Saiyan and they're on a nurse.
Yeah.
I thought
that was really weird to
they bring back like Gubira, and they bring back like, I don't know, barely any Tiga kaiju.
Yeah.
It feels like this unholy mashup. Yeah, sorry. I'm gonna say it feels like kind of an unholy mashup in some respects, because it's like, well, wait a minute, like the 7th anniversary is coming up. Let's put Metron and Nurse in it.
Yeah.
You know, like that sort of thing. And you know, I wonder how many of the Tiga suits actually still survive, though. Like, that's the other side of it.
Yeah, because like I don't think any of the suits still survive. Because you look at the suit for Gazort, and it's clearly a stage show suit, and it's pretty gnarly looking one at that. But like everything else, you know, because like with Sevenger, they had to make a whole new suit for Sevenger in Zet, and I'm assuming with like, you know, they have to do that with every returning kaiju, like with Takong and Gimaira and Taiga, they had to do that. So,
yeah,
you know, that counts towards what's going on there. And I'm also not shocked that I wonder if partially, and this is just a theory, partially the reason why we haven't seen that many suits is they're also doing the Ultra Fight shows, because we had Absolute Conspiracy.
Yeah.
And then we have Death and Crossroads. So they had to do suits for those Ultras. They had to do suits for the villains. And whoever else shows up in that, like, you know, right. Like, I don't, has Xerth had a suit that's been usable?
Well, I mean,
he showed up in Mega Monster Battle Ultra Hex Legends, the movie.
Yeah.
Well,
he didn't show up in that.
I swear to God, he didn't show up in that.
No, he showed up in it.
What? I've watched that movie. Okay. You got to give me screen caps of that. I've not seen him in Mega Monster Battle Legends, the movie. He's
tucked away, but I'm pretty sure he shows up.
Yeah, I remember, because like, know, Ultraman Xerth is like one of my favorite Ultraman things.
You guys are pulling. I can't believe that. I feel like you just told me the Mona Lisa was fake or something. God.
Well, I mean, well, yeah, it's all a conspiracy, didn't you know? I mean, the Mona Lisa was just conceived so we could win the space race. No. Anyway, what I was going to say is, like, the Xerth suit, I mean, really all it is just you have the main helmet and the rest is Lycra.
Yeah.
So, so it shouldn't be too hard to, like, you know, cobble it together if you needed it.
Yes, but, like, again, like, it's sort of that thing of who has a usable suit, who needs a suit. What new characters do we need to bring back?
And will Bandai be willing to make toys to justify it?
Yes, because Trigger, Zet kind of had this problem too, where we didn't get too much new kaiju suits going on. We had Sevenger, and then we got Ultroid Zero and Destrodos, and we got his name escapes me. We got their names escape me. The alien pirate, and
Baba Roy, whatever, Babaru, whatever.
Not Babaru. It's Barossa. Yeah. And we got Jenna Garg, and also the new King Joe. So, like,
yeah,
there was that. And then I'm wondering, because again, like, these suits cost money to make, especially if you're only going to use them for like one episode, and then you have to store them away in the warehouse for who knows how long. So looking at Trigger, we have obviously the different Trigger suits. We had the Dark Giant suits. We had the final boss suits. And we got Mecha Musashin, the cool robot guy from the end game. And then we got Death Drago, who was a Hellbearer suit redone. And then we got Power Dada, which was probably the best tribute episode in Trigger, and it's not even for Tiga, which I find funny. But
it's also probably the best episode.
Yeah, I would say so. Oh, and Boris and Vanilla too. They got some new suits as well.
Yeah.
So there's not a
whole lot. Also, I want to rescind my Xerath and Ultra Galaxy. Now I'm not sure.
Okay, because
I could have sworn he was in it.
I thought he might have been in the background, but it also might have been that I really wanted him to be in the movie. And I was disappointed that he wasn't, and that's what I'm remembering. But he will be in the new Ultra Galaxy Fight series.
Which I'm good with, because I know Boy shows up in the movie, along with the foreign Ultras. But
Boy gets, like, the most depressing appearance. He's hiding for his poor life, hiding behind a wall, and I'm like, oh my god, someone protect that child.
I don't think Xerath would be on there, because he's from Z95, he's not from M78.
I just looked it up, it looks like he wasn't it. I think, we just wanted him to be there.
Technically, Chuck, Scott, and Beth aren't from M78 either, but they showed up.
Yeah, they're from M78, but they're like M78. Ultras, from what I recall. We will discuss Ultra Planets
in another podcast.
that would be a really fun one, though. There's so many weird, like Toy One. Like I want to go to Nicest Planet. Let's see another Ultra from Toy One.
Dear Koichi Sakamoto, please let us get another Ultraman Nice Ultra in the new Ultra Fight. Enclosed are photos of legs. Yours truly, my dad.
I guess if we're gonna talk about Ultra Galaxy Fight, how about that Reboot guest episode?
Oh yeah, that
that was okay.
It was fun.
It was cool to see Reboot, but it was also, I remember watching it and being like, "Wow, the Dark Giants are not threatening in any way, shape, or form."
No,
bringing in another cooler looking guy that comes in and then just leaves. It's just
also
the Dark Giants are the Durambo gang, mm-hmm. and
oh, they totally are.
Honestly, if they leaned into that, they'd be better villains.
They by the end of the show, we're supposed to be led to believe that they're actually very evil and strong. And it's like, no, they're a bunch of goofs, and I can't take them as anything. Like, they're lovable goofs. If they stuck to being goofy in the whole show, it would be funny. But
one idea I had,
Team Rocket, basically.
If I was writing Trigger, one idea I had. Oh, you know what would be really funny? If they were leaning into the comedy with Trigger. Trigger Dark didn't turn good because he decided to be a good guy. He decided to turn good because his friends were really embarrassing.
Oh, that would have been perfect!
That would have been so funny! But no, I think one thing I would have done with the Dark Giants, if I was writing the show, I would have had more scenes of them just kind of processing what time and world they now woke up in. Because they've been asleep for 30 million years. They probably don't know what the fuck an ice cream cone is. Like have an episode where they are wandering around town, everyone thinks they're in costume, and they, you know, people are getting pictures like, oh, we're being worshipped. We could be gods in this new world. And, you know, Dargon tries ice cream and he gets a brain freeze. So then they summon, I don't know, Zambolar to melt the ice caps. So there'll be no more ice in the world. Everything will be
Someone out there, please make fan art of this. Please. Please make phone calls, Goma. MC, if you're listening to this, please.
Just lean into that, like, that goofier sort of fun nature of it. Like, if you know, we're going to have them as recurring villains. But I think if I was going to have them as, like, more serious villains, they need to be behind the scenes. They need to be working towards a goal that prevents them from just running out in the field all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, one – and this is, again, going into my stupid fanfic territory – but one idea would be if we were going to have them be kind of behind the scenes, and we still wanted to have them in each episode because we've advertised them as being in each episode, you could have like really creepy scenes. Like, you know, let's say we're fighting Pandon in this episode, and Trigger defeats Pandon in some unrelated sort of thing. What are the Dark Giants from their underwater lair? They mold an effigy of Pandon, and they do like a creepy sort of Cthulhu mythos-esque like ritual or dance, and the effigy's eyes glow, and then Pandon stands up and like he grows a third head or like a Bemstar kind of belly pops out, mm-hmm. or just something creepy like that. Like they empower the kaiju with their evil energy or whatever. Like give them something that kind of either makes them fun and silly or like a genuine threat.
So many of these villains would like collect a widget after their monster is defeated and then, you know,
I guess
use them to make a bigger monster or something.
Yeah. But going back to the reboot crossover, I like it in theory. I like the idea of the crossover in theory. But my main thing is, well, one, like Alex said, the Dark Giants are kind of, they're goofs. Mm-hmm. Number two, I think it was, I had this problem in Zet, and I had this problem with Trigger. And this is just me being a turbo nerd. They should have let Reboot keep his transformation device from the Oopin and Eepin, mm-hmm. where he crosses the thing and transforms. Yeah. I think that was dumb to give him the Hyper Guts key or whatever. And the other thing is, so the Eternity Core is this powerful and is this important. Why doesn't Absolute Tartarus and Duvalo just travel back in time further after they failed to get it again?
Mm-hmm.
I know they can't, because obviously otherwise the show would devolve into that. But like, if you're bringing out these villains, these bad guys who are capable of doing this, why are they just like, oh well, our friend got blown up, he'll be okay. Let's not look for this ultimate power source. We'll be fine.
It reminds me of the Kikaider reboot episode of Kamen Rider Gaim.
Yeah.
Okay, this is fun, but also it doesn't really work in the context of either property.
Like, it derails everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think if, again, if Trigger was maybe a little bit goofier and, like, not as constrained to the main plotline it had, that it would be a fun episode, but, like, it just feels a little too off. For like a really, like, it's not like the Max episode of X or like the Zero episode of, you know, it's not like any of the crossover episodes from X, because that had some of the best crossovers in the franchise, if you ask me. It doesn't feel like a natural blending of these two shows. It feels kind of like a weird sort of like thing that happens and just has no consequence on either of these characters showing up.
But it still feels like it has more consequence than when Tiga actually shows up.
Yes, it does, though. And Tiga, I think Tiga showing up could have been like one of the moments of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of just happens, and then it's done. It's like, okay, here you go. That's it.
Yeah, it feels so strange. And sorry to, you know, if anyone has more to say about the reboot stuff, we can go back to it, but yeah, that's. I think we've already kind of said our piece on Tiga's showing up, but it does just befuddle me that he doesn't impart any special knowledge onto our cast. He doesn't stick around. He doesn't interact really. He doesn't. I mean, I understand why he doesn't transform into a human form, because
people would have rioted immediately. Oh,
he could have at least like shown up again or something.
I was expecting the final episode to at least have him show up and be like, I don't know, you just fucking show up and give a thumbs up to Trigger or something, you know?
Yeah.
I would have expected him to show up in the final like minutes and just like be like, oh no, like it's like Ken goes down, what are we gonna do? And then everyone becomes the light again, and then he shows up.
Like the Goku Gohan Kamehameha moment from.
Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been fucking cool.
Do you know what would have been really funny? What if in that Tiga episode, Tiga transforms into Daigo, but they shoot it so like he's at a distance and it's like misty and dark, so you don't see his face, like the back of his head. Yeah. And they have like a sound alike.
Yeah.
It would be much easier if Dinah showed up.
Yeah. Oh boy.
I mean, frankly, any of the cast of Tiga or Dinah would have been welcome to kind of drop in.
10 Monopony Dollars says that we're going to have cameos in episodes that.
That would have been fun. I think, honestly, one thing I kind of wish Trigger was, instead of what it is, on the subject of the cast, I think if maybe if it was more like, and this constitutes like an entire rewrite of the show. So we're gonna pretend everything we know about Trigger except for the title New Generation Tiga is gone. But what if the show was built around the idea of, okay, we're doing a third Tiga show, but in the style of the New Gen show, and it's gonna be set in the Neo Frontier universe, and instead of having this sort of weird plot line of it being a remake and a sequel with a character from the original two shows who actually isn't from those original two shows leading the charge, what if it was like Hori instead? Like Hori is like leading this kind of raggedy skeleton crew of Guts, because like there's no more monster attacks. The solar system's at peace. Guts is kind of just around a la Mebius.
So Heisei Ultra 7, basically.
Heisei Ultra 7, basically. And then shit goes down. And now Hori, with his veteran status, has to lead this team through this, you know, new crazy situation who've never maybe been even – maybe they weren't even alive when, like, the events of Dinah happened.
Yeah.
So, like, he now has to be like, okay, yeah, this has happened before. We got to get through it. It's going to get really bad.
Well, and that's the thing is I love Shintakuma. Like, we got nothing against the guy. But – Why wasn't his role played by someone from the cast of Tiga?
Yeah.
Would
it have been a spoiler? Like,
I guess, but like, you know, in Max, they bring back, effectively Dan Moriboshi and Shin Hayata, right? They bring back their actors to reprise new roles, and it's like, hey, this makes sense. Yeah. It's kind of a passing of the torch.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have made more sense to bring back literally anyone from Tiga to fill his role?
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, like Shinjiro or whatever. That would have been amazing or something like that. Like Munetaka, I mean, he's not really doing a whole lot these days.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they have the same, you know, contract stipulations.
No, yeah. And that would have been fine, because I know we'll probably not see Daigo again, unfortunately, but...
Unless, you know, like, somehow they make, like, a lot of money.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just someone from Tiga that we know, like, they don't have to be playing, like, and you could maybe even lean into that. Like, if you wanted to do, like, an alternate universe, you could lean into how this character is different than how they were in Tiga. And, you know, that's just a, kind of the thing. Like, I feel like with Trigger, when you look at the show and you watch the show, you kind of realize, oh, it would have been cool if they had done X, or they would have been cool if they had done this instead. And it's not done.
Yeah. And,
you know, you're just kind of left with the show that's pretty, pretty eh at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Especially for an anniversary show.
It just kind of goes out on a whimper, really, and it's like,
yeah.
And I feel like that's just the resounding chorus at this point. As we kind of go back and forth to everything, it's just it could have been,
it should have been,
yeah. Kind
of. Like,
Another thing that kind of confuses me is Shizuma says like, "Oh, I saw Tiga save the world 30 years ago, as opposed to 25 years ago." Like, why would you make that the difference? If it's a 25th anniversary show.
Well, he's rounding up.
I believe it.
If I wanted to give my stupid, nerdy, no-prize explanation, it would be, well, you see, Dinah takes place 10 years after Tiga, and Dinah shows up in the Mega Monster Battle movie, and that's when Belial is released, and Belial has to have got... you know, had 20 years to have a kid for Geed to take place.
Yeah.
Geed is a prerequisite for Zet, and Zet shows up in Trigger. So, you know, it has to be 30 years.
Yeah.
I don't know if this applies to all universes, but given that Ultraman Zero is, what is he, like 4,800 years old? Geed, I think you might need more than 20 years to have a kid in the Ultra universe, but
also Warp Origin blows a hole in my entire property.
Yeah,
Geed's also an artificial clone, so he was, you know, like in Ultra years he's barely even considered alive, but like, you know, he's it's weird. Ultraman ages are weird is what I'm saying. You got Grigio, who's like a year old, I guess, in Ultra. I don't know. I give up.
It's like power levels. Don't even.
They just show up. Like how old is Ginga? Because, like, spoiler alert for Ginga.
Drink.
Ginga and Dark Lugia used to be a guy, but who was that guy? How old was that guy when he decided to become two guys? So is Ginga's age based on the old guy that he split from, or is he based on when he split?
And how far is the time skip between Ultraman Mabius and Ultra Galaxy the series? Because, like, humanity starts colonizing space by the time we get to Ultra Galaxy, and they barely remember Kaiju.
Yeah, yes, Zap Spacey should have been. Yeah, like, it's unclear if that's even the same. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
This is a whole other podcast.
Here's the thing. We've reached that point where, like, we've hit the wall of I think of things we can really say about triggers that, like, we're diverting.
we're diverting more interesting topics that make us feel more excited. Like, because it's I would love to spitball, because I actually wrote out a timeline. I tried to do a continuity web of Ultraman, and very quickly it became just a jumbled mess.
It's hard.
Having been someone who tried to translate Universe Roadmap, I feel that. Oh my god.
it's not as crazy as it looks. Like there's some internal logic to it, and like you have to realize that some stuff like kind of exists in its own bubble. Like Heisei Ultra 7 exists in its own bubble. The manga exists in its own bubble. I assume Shin Ultraman exists in its own bubble.
Yeah.
And everything else, it's like it's a collection of universes that they're able to travel to. It's just a matter of like who is from what universe and why and where are they going.
As far as I know, in Tsuburaya's eyes, every Ultra thing that exists is part of the multiverse.
Yes.
Like in theory, Ultraman Zero could pop into Shin Ultraman and say, "Hey, buddy, where's your color timer?" and then dip out, and like that's.
I think it would be really funny if, like, in whatever show we get down the line in the future after Shin Ultraman just shows up. I know it probably won't happen, but we also had Reboot and Nice and Xerth be brought back, so
maybe the Marvel Ultraman will show up in something. And
I'm crossing my fingers for Kaiju Girls.
Oh my god! I mean that. You know what? I kind of want to see it just because I want to see the world burn. let's do it, folks.
I want to see the manga Ultraman meet like other Ultramen that are proper sized and be like, ah, shit, you know?
They have those suits for the manga Ultraman and Ultra 7. They could have an episode where they show up.
Yeah.
And not emerge from their suits and explain, oh, we're from a different universe, yada, yada, yada. Wow, Ultraman are like this here. Ultraman are like this here. And then you could do like a Kamen Rider versus Ultraman thing where you have like a ground battle in the background. Whoever's the Ultraman is wrestling.
They could do Ultraman No Way Home.
They could. I think they've done that multiple times, technically.
Well, that's
they have done that multiple times.
I mean, that's what, you know, Ultra Galaxy Legends was to an extent.
Yes.
But holy shit. All right.
another marketing thing in Trigger, at least I assume this is a marketing decision, is what's up with Guts Select having two high school students on their, like, roster?
That's a good question. I wonder if it's some sort of advanced placement thing. But
Gut Select has so few members that I think they were scraping the bottom of the barrel. Like, if high school students are willing to join, great. We only have six people.
Well, I mean, it's like nepotism. You know, like, well, nepotism for one of them, and then the other one is just, yeah, no, like, he...
No, they're both nepotism.
Yeah, they're both nepotism. Yeah. Yeah,
like, was like, I have my daughter, and I have my adopted son. I'm going to... Oh, by the way, another thing... There was kind of a love triangle with Kengo, Akita, and Yuna that, like, was there for one episode and never happened again.
Well, Akito gets mad at, like, in the first, I think, five episodes or maybe even less, the whole drama of I was supposed to be Ultraman, Kengo is Ultraman, I hate Kengo, now I've gone over this and now I can support Kengo, that happens, and then it gets undone. And they go through it again for the rest of the series.
You also feel like with that sort of, like, I was going to be Ultraman, that would lead to, like, one of the Dark Giants, like, possessing him or him becoming Trigger Dark.
Yeah. Again, I assume that was something that was probably intended to happen, but got rewritten.
Like, you know, as much as I love Ignis's Trigger Dark, that sort of makes a little more sense than like, oh, Trigger Dark got exercised from Trigger. Oh, Ignis, you're right here. You get to be Trigger Dark.
Yeah, because Ignis doesn't feel like a foil for Kengo in the same way.
No, like I almost feel like Ignis could be like the host to like a much more asshole-ish version of Ultraman Nice. Just think about it. Think about it. Like a goofier, like, you know, Ultra that's like, you know, I'm just here to just goof around. I'm here for a lark. This is a joke, guys. Come on. Yeah. Versus I'm now going to be the berserk evil Ultraman that we all know and love.
Right.
You know, it sounds like we're you know, wrapping up on things to talk about, but there's one thing that we didn't talk about that is the elephant in the room, and that is Smile, Smile.
Smile, Smile!
Okay, so that was one of those, like, oh, we need a positive message to counter depression from COVID or something like that. That's how they was spun in the propaganda. It, to me, feels like, again, they watched the movie and we're like, hey, this is a line in the movie, people remember this, it's like Beat It to Death.
There's
I don't even remember that in the movie, and I watched
neither it. neither do I.
Yeah. Yeah, though, there's a whole thing to me where it's like, again, it's like, it feels like Daigen Tar, because Forze was conceived as a show that was supposed to be like helping kids get through the 311 earthquake and tsunami crisis.
Yes.
In Japan. And so that's why that character was designed the way he was. Because he was supposed to be everyone's best friend, you know, and he was always out to help people. He wanted to be your best buddy. And Forze is a flawed show, but I love it, and it was successful. Now, you could tell somebody looked at that and was like, let's just do the same thing here. And the problem is they didn't really give him a character apart from a catchphrase. And that's something that Super Sentai has been guilty of for the past couple of years.
You're so lucky!
Yeah, or Ninja. I can't stand the Red Ranger in that. It was like, for that very reason.
So, to me, it's like, I don't mind if a character is like, oh, I'm a good guy, I'm gonna, you know, smiles to people, because we're criticizing a show made for 8-year-olds, so
yeah.
I get it, but like, I think it would have been great if perhaps we had like an episode where like Kengo helped out, like maybe the main crux of the episode was there's a kaiju attack and Kengo reunites a mother and her lost kid or something, or like he just like interacting with the people in the world and getting them to smile again. Cause like, to me, just saying smile, smile feels very, very hollow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He just says
feeding the emotion into your head.
Do it.
Yeah. Maybe like you could have an episode where like someone's having a terrible day at Gutselect, and maybe, you know, I don't know, like maybe
an explanation,
something. An explanation, right. like Kengo at the end surprises him, like, oh, I got you donuts. I know you love donuts, and I, you know, we've been fighting the dark giants, and it's been really stressful. So I got you your favorite treat. And
even I was just saying, like, I, it's funny. I hate to compare this show to Tiga because I don't really think it is anything like Tiga. But
you can't not compare it.
Yeah,
they invite that comparison, so I think that's fair.
Yeah, it wants me to compare it to Tiga. Like, in Tiga, I mean, Daigo is not a smile-smile kind of character, but, like, he's trying to help people, and he's trying to do the right thing, and he shows, like, care and concern and love for children, and that pays off in a big way in the show with the final episode in a way that feels earned and genuine. It doesn't feel tacked on. Right. And I think that you can look at, you know, Kengo says smile, smile. He doesn't really do much to bring smiles or like to even interact with children, which, hey, that may be due to COVID and stuff. I get it. But then maybe there's a different angle they should have gone with. And then at the end, they still bring in the whole thing where a bunch of kids,
yeah,
makes Trigger in more powerful, and like, it's not It's not earned. It's very much that Star Trek Into Darkness moment where he says, "I am Khan," and it's like, well, who's Khan? You know, I didn't watch the original. Who's Khan?
I remember seeing the finale and Trigger. Excuse me.
Hang on there.
The fight, because like in Tiga, spoilers for Tiga.
Drink.
Take another shot. In Tiga, Gatinothor, it's a cliffhanger. Gatinothor turns Tiga to stone and Tiga sinks to the bottom of the sea. And you're like, how the hell does Tiga get out of this? He is finished. Our boy is dead. And then the light from the main characters, the side characters, the one-off characters, and people from around the world who we're seeing being affected by this revived Tiga. And Tiga, you know, he's Glitter Tiga and he saves the day. In Trigger, he becomes Trigger Truth, which he becomes Trigger Truth in the most anticlimactic way possible.
Yeah.
Where Ignis just kind of shoots him, but not in like a cool way where like they're trying to figure out what's going on. And then, you know, Ignis is like, oh, I know how. Bam. It's just like, okay, you stand here. I will shoot it into your hands. You shove it in there. You become Trigger Truth. You got it, buddy. and then he fights Megalothor. Which sounds kind of like a parody of an Ultraman kaiju name. And then they go to the bottom of the ocean, and they're kind of at a stalemate, and then five kids, who we've not seen in the show, who are watching us from, like, a Jumbotron in town, go, oh, you can do a Trigger? And then he doesn't become superpowered from that. He just pops out of the ground, punches Megalothor a bit, and blows her up. It feels like a flat soda compared to Tiga's finale. Like it's very like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. The flavor is there. It's just, where's the pop? Where's the zing?
It's the Crystal Pepsi.
Yes. It's Crystal Pepsi. Yeah.
At least have like, you know, Dark actually like fuse with him. So it's some sort of, now I'm a whole complete person again or something. Like,
yeah. That would have been fine. Or like maybe, not to say I want him killed off because I don't like, or like Ignis sacrifices himself to give the light to Kengo or
whatever. Just where I thought they were going to go with it.
Something with a little more meat to it.
Right.
But instead it's like, oh, I'm going to, because like we have this, because they reference this scene from the episode where Ignis defeats Hudrim for the last time, where Kengo is able to lend Trigger Dark his light to defeat Hudrim. And that's a really great episode, and there's a really good payoff there. And they do it again here, but they forgot how it worked a couple episodes ago, and they forgot how it worked in Tiga. So, like, it feels very much like an afterthought. Oh, we need to give him a final form. Okay, we'll give him this.
Yes.
And it's just like, okay.
And what did you guys think of the actual, like, overall ending of the show? I found it bizarrely anticlimactic in a lot of ways.
It happened. There was, like, a brief stretch, like, right from the Barra Giler episode to Hudrim's defeat, where I thought the show was going to stick the landing. I thought the show was going to stick the landing, and we were going to at least end on a high note. And I could have gone, well, you know, so show, but ended really well. And then it didn't. And
it feels like it didn't end, right? Like,
yeah.
Like more than any other new gen show, it feels like we if we want an ending, we have to watch the movie. That's my assumption. I don't know. I know that.
Yeah.
Other Ultraman trailer shows.
Right after the end credits.
Yeah.
See, and I feel like if they hadn't announced episode Zet right away, I think that might have had a bit more weight to it.
Yes, but we got commercials for episode Zet right off the bat. So he's gonna come back.
Yeah, but even if they hadn't, I mean, the previous new gen Ultraman shows, that they'll have an ending that is in and of itself satisfying, right?
Yeah.
I would agree.
And then the movie serves to maybe be an epilogue or maybe just be another adventure. And I mean, like even with Tiga, like I personally kind of prefer the ending to Tiga as opposed to like the Final Odyssey. I still enjoy the Final Odyssey, but I really like the ending to Tiga as an ending.
And that speaking of, but yeah, like I'll get to my thoughts on the Final Odyssey in a minute, but Tiga's ending is one of the best Ultraman finales ever, if not the best. I think there's a couple others that like I maybe would put in that kind of ranking with Tiga.
Right.
But with Trigger, it just kind of happens. And I also feel like it's kind of weirdly paced too. Like things just occur. Like, oh, Trigger's getting the light of the world. Oh, Trigger became Trigger Truth. Oh, we defeated the big bad villain, but the Eternity Corps is still going to blow up the Earth. I have to go stop it. And then it just kind of just stops.
Yeah.
Like it feels very weirdly paced. It's not very exciting or edgy receipt. It just is like it kind of feels like, okay, we need this last episode. Let's just get this done. Let's, you know.
Yeah.
We got a movie. We'll be good. So.
It's very, it feels very by paint by numbers, kind of focus tested, like do what we did before.
Yeah. Like, what's a safe way to end this show? Okay, yeah. We'll just do Tiga again.
That's the key word, I think, is safe.
Yeah.
So, on that note, it sounds like we're doing this again next year with another new generation. I'm personally horrified of this prospect. What are your hopes and fears?
I don't want to say, oh, I hope it's good, because I think that's a very nebulous sort of wish.
Well, there goes my response. No.
Obviously, I want every Ultraman show I watch to be good. I hate ragging on Ultraman. I hate ragging on Trigger. I wish Trigger was like one of the best Ultraman shows I saw. I wish Trigger, you know, succeeded when it more than it failed. But like I think whatever they do next, and I think, you know, again, this is kind of what Ultraman is now, is kind of like an anniversary. Like every season, whether it's intentional or not, celebrates the past. And like usually I think they do a really good job. I know some people have umbrage at that, but like I think they usually do a good job with whatever returning kaiju or Ultraman they bring back. But I wonder if that bubble has burst after Trigger, because usually we do pretty well, and Zet did really well with that.
Yeah.
And then Trigger was just kind of like, oh, people like this, we'll do it again. So I guess I hope that if just be more smart with that nostalgia, because like,
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff in Dinah I like and love, but like unless there's kind of a reason to bring it back, I don't do it. Like I love Hanijiro, but like don't just randomly bring him back. Make it impactful that this guy who we haven't seen for a while is back.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, and in addition to that, like, I think the nostalgia stuff works well in the other shows because there's plenty of new stuff to counteract it with. Like, there's new designs for the Ultras or new kaiju or a new setting, a new plot. Just new stuff. Like, give me some new stuff. Like, that, like, when Trigger decided to be weird and new and, like, I liked that. I thought that was fun. But when it decided to just kind of copy Final Odyssey is when I found myself tuning out. Like, and the good news is about Dinah is that Dinah doesn't have a whole lot of plot beats to copy from.
Oh, yeah.
And the main plot beat to copy from it, the Terranoid story, was already copied in Ultraman Z. So unless they want to try to milk that again, which I, God forbid, I hope they don't. Like, do something new if you're going to do that. Like, I don't know what they're going to do with Decker. I don't know whether they're going to, it looks like they're going to do something with Dinah because the preview show that is going to be about Dinah.
Yeah.
But the one thing I remember about Dinah as a show is Dinah was funny as hell.
Yes.
Dinah didn't have a whole lot of lore to like be bogged down in. Dinah was just, okay, we're going to be goofy. We're going to have aliens have kids make a video game monster. We're gonna have an episode where Asuka cucks a giant ape. get silly with it. Ultraman is great when it's silly. Like, do that. Like, but have it be new silliness. Have it be new silliness. Give us some new stuff.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I want from it. I want something new.
I would I would be very shocked if we don't have, you know, Hane Saburo or whatever exist to sell plugins.
Yeah.
But I think that, remember that Orb was also an anniversary show for Tiga, but Orb yes. had its own identity. Yeah. So I would implore Tsuburaya to try to do something similar. And when I say that, I don't mean remake Orb. I mean do something new.
And if you're going to remake Orb, for the love of God, just do the next of the 10 episodes and just bring everyone back, you cowards.
Yeah. I think when it comes to the next show, for me it's less about... I guess it's less about like what is the next show going to be and what's it going to look like, but let me put it this way. I love Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim is one of my favorite movies. It's one of my favorite kaiju things. It's fantastic. Pacific Rim Uprising was upsetting. Yes. And Pacific Rim Black, I actually kind of enjoyed, but there was still the taste of Uprising in there, and it had to remind me that Uprising existed and made me
sad. Yeah.
I am concerned that whatever's coming next is going to try to tie itself directly to Trigger, and I don't think that's the best, you know, solution. Like my worry is that they were so hot on this idea of Trigger that they'd already planned it out to match up to what Trigger was doing and to sync in, you know, maybe even have the same cast or set in the same universe. I guess my only hope is that from a production side, whoever's in charge lets the creatives take the time they need to make something good and lets them just do their job. You know?
Also, yeah.
Please leave Gaia alone the year after that.
Yes.
Please.
If Decker is a Dino remake, just don't touch Gaia. We've had Gaia like remade, like we've had that dynamic done like 3 or 4 different shows. Don't touch it. Please.
Please.
Yeah. If like it's one thing to come after Tiga, but if you harm my boy Gaia.
Yeah, we're going to be throwing hands.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like it's a bad place for the mainline Ultraman to, you know, this is their flagship.
Yeah.
And they're able to prop themselves up now with all this additional, you know, the Netflix show and the Shin Ultraman movie and merchandise and mangas and novels and all these other things. But I think that they should be putting more, a few more eggs into that basket. That is their main show. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
We can only hope at this point.
Like I love the Ultraman spinoff material, but my main love is for the shows. Like, please continue to give me some wild new Ultraman show each year. But like, you know, give it the care it's had before.
Yeah, just yeah, I can't really add anything to that at that point. It's just I want to believe, you know, I want to believe. I want to believe in this upcoming show. And
and this is kind of a symptom of Ultraman in general being really good as a franchise, is that so many more hits than misses that when it does miss, it
misses really hard.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing is, like, with the exception of Powered, maybe, and even then Powered doesn't fully copy its inspiration, but with, like, Ginga and with, like, Powered, to an extent, they still feel like they have some sort of identity to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at Trigger, and all I see is, like, a shadow of Tiga, or specifically the Tiga movie.
Yeah, thick Tiga, basically.
Yeah, it's Diet Tiga. It's Tiga remade by it's the final Odyssey made into a limited series by Hollywood. I don't feel that same sort of they were trying this and I appreciate them for trying that, but it just feels like sort of been there, done that. Right. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I also think that it's a like. Ultraman is a multi-pronged franchise, right? Like they're trying to make stuff that's aiming at different age groups and demographics. Like for those of us who are, you know, I guess, of an older, like, or a millennial generation, there's things that they're making that are targeted at us, like Shin Ultraman, the Marvel comics, the anime, stuff like that. And, like, that's all cool. I dig that stuff. I'm into it. But what's always impressed me is that the core program that's for kids has still always been quality enough that I still enjoy it, you know?
Yes.
And I don't want that to ever change, because it's fun to still be able to enjoy that stuff. So I just hope that can be maintained into the future.
Yeah. I wonder if maybe part of it has also got to do with the whole the rights issue surrounding Final Odyssey as its own, you know, separate thing because of the music.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
But that's also speculation. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyhow, I think we've just about said our final pieces. Anybody have anything else to add before we sign off? Smile, smile.
Pull the trigger. I don't know. Fucking, you watch the show.
Dokoka karashige na kagayaki himeta me.